Hey, Evan.
What?
What's your favorite thing about Northern New Jersey?
Oh, you motherfucker. you sly devil.
Is it the IKEA in Paramus?
It should be.
Is it the beautiful Newark International Airport? Is it the Sopranos opening theme?
That's actually what it is. Making the stretch from the Lincoln Tunnel to fucking Wayne, New Jersey look like the most beautiful and enticing land of all time. Gonna take you down.
Hello, and welcome to Expected Own Goals, Too Many Cooks in the Northern New Jersey Kitchen Edition. I am your host, Eric Morgan.
I'm Evan Davis. Yes, we are in the home stretch with NWSL Season Preview Week. We are talking about last year's third place finisher, Gotham FC, with none other than Jenna Tinelli of Sports Illustrated making her long-awaited return to the show. Not a lot of Galacticos left lying around in Harrison, but they're still juggling a lot of balls in the air, aren't they?
Yeah, maybe not a bad thing, by the way.
Yeah, for sure.
The lack of Galactico-ness. Yeah, Jenna, as always, is a pleasure. Now, please enjoy our conversation with America's best 23-year-old journalist.
But what we should make a couple of notes about some roster stuff, because everybody is rolling out their final completed rosters before the season starts. Chicago fans, a little bit of hope, a little bit of despair with Samantha Staub coming off of the season-ending injury list.
Love that.
Natalia Cuica going on the 45-day disabled list.
Don't love that.
So figure out how you balance all of that. But maybe most critically to this conversation is that Midge Purse is officially no longer an SEI player. She will be in the mix for the start of the regular season, which every Gotham fan should be very excited about.
Hell yeah. Now, please enjoy our conversation with Jenna Tinelli, America's and your and my favorite 23-year-old journalist.
One of our favorite people is here to talk about Gotham FC. From Sports Illustrated, it's Jenna Tinelli. Hi, Jenna.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
First and foremost, Lynn Biondolo and Crystal Dunn, who are both late of this parish, have both made comments, albeit obliquely, about the behind-the-scenes, quote-unquote, culture issues at the club. In as much as you are able to discuss this in public, what was going on at Gotham in 2024 that saw not just these two very high-profile American internationals head out the door, but also several more behind them besides?
Wow, really jumping right into it. You know, what happened to hello? How are you? You know, but no. I mean, obviously, that is the big story behind Gotham's 2024-25 offseason. And it's a good question. And I think looking at Gotham holistically with about a dozen departures this offseason, I would say that if you look at every single one of them on an individual level, they have their reasons for leaving. You know, you have a player like Maitane Lopez, Sam Hyatt. They're going to want some more playing time. You know, you have a Delaney Sheehan who is going to want to, like, get her back, you know, coming off a rookie deal. And then you also, you know, looking, like I said, looking holistically big picture, you have a roster that, you know, people at Gotham might not want to say it's a super team. It was a super team. It was a roster constructed as a super team. And I think my personal opinion is that those kind of rosters, at least in the NWSL, don't really work. And I think we're kind of seeing the results of that. People not happy with their playing time. I mean, I'm not, you know, in the locker room. I can't speak to what's going on there. But I think what we're seeing is not really like a reason to panic. I think in the NWSL, so often a lot of stories kind of turn into these really like horrible, you know, there was this terrible environment and culture and abuse and all that. That's not anything I've heard of that's happening here. I think it just didn't work, which is interesting because the team was like generally successful. I mean, they made it to the semifinals. They made it to the CONCACAF thingy that I always forget the name of. They're in that semifinal as well. But, you know, clearly people were looking for other things that they weren't getting there. And I think the team is regressing back to the mean of a very, very good roster that still has like Tierna Davis and Rose Lavelle, Esther, bringing in, you know, Gabby Portillo, like, you know, so it's still a Midge, signing, resigning Midge. So So yes, I think it's kind of like twofold. And yes, there's clearly movement there, but also like there, it's fine.
You alluded to something just a second ago that this was a generally pretty successful group in 2024. By the regular season benchmark, this was the best regular season Gotham's ever had. And that goes back to their WPS days and when they were Sky Blue all the way back in 2009, 2010. The other thing about playing time that tracks for me with Crystal Dunn and some of the players lower down the depth chart, like Hyatt and Mitani, like you mentioned. Biondolo doesn't make a lot of sense to me in terms of that narrative, because Biondolo was the first choice option for basically the entire year when she was healthy. The only game where she was benched that it kind of stuck out to me was the semifinal against Washington in the playoffs. Does Biondolo fit that narrative for you? Am I off base here with having my antenna go up?
No, it's a good question. And I think, you know, not everybody is leaving Gotham because of playing time. I think that some are, you know, some are leaving for playing time, some are leaving for more money. And some, for Lynn, just kind of listening to a lot of her comments, you know, over the offseason, it clearly just wasn't a place for her. I don't really know why. I don't know, you know, the ins and outs of that. But, you know, she hopefully will have a really good time and be successful at Seattle Reign. And sometimes I think teams just don't work out for certain players for whatever reason. And yeah, I would agree, like, just like the only thing about her playing time was it definitely towards the end of the season, but she was also injured, like you said, and then she didn't start in the semifinal. So I don't know, maybe there's more to it, but you're right. I wouldn't say that playing time specifically was for Lynn's reason for departure in the same way that it would be for like a Maitane or Sam or, well, not Delaney. She played 90 minutes basically every game.
Yeah. There didn't seem to be any kind of disharmony. No, to whatever extent on the record or off the record, these kinds of conversations or issues were not apparent in Juan Carlos Amoros' first season in 2023 when the club won a championship. Does it really just come down to the super team point that, quote unquote, the vibes shifted from 23 to 24? Or is there maybe something else going on? Or maybe these issues were present and winning just, you know, makes everything look rosy by comparison. What would you attribute sort of that vibe shift from 23 to 24 to?
No, that's a good question. I think it's really hard to say. I mean, the roster was quite different from 2023 to 2024. You had, you know, I think in 2023, it was kind of like, it was a good roster, but more of a scrappy roster. And you kind of had Allie Krieger there kind of rallying the troops. And I think, you know, she was almost like a player coach kind of, but also contributor, kind of doing it all that season. 2024, it was just different, a different roster. I don't know if I can't say just because I don't know if there was problems from 23 going over to 24. It's possible, but I really don't know. It's a good question. I really don't know.
With a lot of roster turnover we've seen this offseason, I think there's been a sense that the sky is falling on some level. But I look at this 11 and I don't necessarily see it that way. Do you feel like there's an overreaction going on sort of in the online space and in the fan sphere that is overstated against what the team is going into this season?
Yes and no. I think seeing 12 departures from a team in the NWSL is quite a lot, especially so many high-level ones. So I definitely understand a little bit of fan and supporter, you know, confusion and alarm. But I don't think that there should be alarm over like how good this roster will be. I think this will still be a pretty good team. However, I think like that's almost like two separate things. Like, I don't think the alarm is about how good the team is or can be, but it is still a little alarming to have that level of turnover. That said, just because there is that level of turnover doesn't necessarily mean that there's anything like particularly bad or salacious going on. For whatever reason, like, people wanted to leave, whether it was personal, playing time, money, looking for something new, like, go, you know, Jenna Neiswanger wants to go to Europe. Like, you know, everybody kind of has their own individual reason for wanting to leave. But seeing so many is definitely, I get the reaction, but I don't think it's indicative of like how this team will perform next season. I think they'll perform pretty well.
As we move through the preseason, are there additions to this roster that you really think are like primed to flourish a player or two that you feel like could really be a game changer for this team coming in?
Yeah, I'm actually obviously like Gabby Portillo, I think is what's going to be really interesting to see her in the NWSL. You know, I didn't watch her club when she was, you know, playing in Brazil because I just don't really know how to, honestly don't know how to watch those games, but obviously had an incredible international career and was a Ballon d'Or finalist. So going to be really interested to see how she fits in terms of newcomers to Gotham. I'm actually looking at the rookies. They have four rookies this year, which is like the most they've had maybe ever, or at least like in the last 5 or 6 years. Lily Real, defender.
Certainly ones that end up being signed to contracts, yeah.
Correct. And I think that has almost everything to do with there being no draft and them being able to you know, pick the players and the players pick Gotham that actually want to be there and will fit into the system. And I think Lily Real has the potential as a defender to be a real contributor on the field. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what she's able to do.
What would you characterize as Yael Everbush-West's approach to this offseason, with the understanding that she was going to have a lot of key contributors go out the door? They signed 5 college players, which is basically at the top of the list in terms of volume in the NWSL. I don't think any team has signed 6. Gabby Portillo, obviously, and then bringing Jalen Howell in the Lynn Biondolo trade, who you have to assume is going to slot right in next to Neely Martin.
Right.
Why the emphasis, though, on college players? And maybe you can't answer this. Why the emphasis on UCLA players?
Yeah. I know. It's like little UCLA over there. No, it's interesting. I think that, you know, the Jalen Howell trade was actually pretty interesting to me because to me, her and Neely Martin fit like a very similar profile of player. Like they're not the same player by any means, but similar profile. So I'm very interested to see how that works out because I do not see Neely Martin not being on that field. Like Juan loves her and for good reason. I mean, she's been great. She got that call up to the national team camp in January for her efforts. I mean, I would agree that I would probably see them playing next to each other on the field rather than one over the other. In terms of the college signings, and I always forget, they signed a rookie goalkeeper as well. I forget. It's really cool, actually. Yes, Ryan Campbell, who's hilarious, by the way. She's been doing some content for them. So I definitely recommend watching that. I think it's a really interesting approach from Yael to actually bring in some young talent and develop them into Gotham's system, which, like we've said, like I haven't really seen them do before. I mean, Jenna Neiswanger is the first rookie since Imani Dorsey to like be like a key contributor on Gotham. So I'm really excited to see what they are able to do. And something I think to remember about like Yael as a general manager is, and she's been very clear about this from the beginning, if a player wants to leave, like she's not going to like force them to stay. So I think that's also kind of like a component in so many of the departures, or maybe at another team, they'd be like, well, tough crap, Yasmin Ryan, like we want to keep you, so you're not getting the trade. But here, you know, they're not making a roster where it's like, well, you're stuck here, ha ha. So I think it's good in a way, and that player movement is definitely something that she views as, you know, if you want to be here on this team and play and contribute, like you will. And if you want to leave, like, okay, we'll figure out a way that makes sense for both you and us as a club to get you to leave. So that, I think, you know, that is kind of like a net positive thing. And so filling so many of those empty roster spots with rookies, I think is like going to be a really interesting, I don't want to say experiment, but a different approach than Gotham has really taken in the past. So very interested to see kind of how that works out.
It feels like Gotham has gone from last season trying to capitalize on the value of winning a title by immediately running it back with a superstar team and coming up maybe just through misfortune short. This time around, this Gotham team seems to be addressing the primary concern you had to have about the 2024 team, which is this is a generally speaking older group of players. It seems like this team is more built with like long range planning at the core of it. First question about this is, can you talk to me a little bit about the black box of understanding that is the highly rated Stella Niamake? How do you pronounce her name?
I think you got it. You know what? Your guess is as good as mine, honestly, because she hasn't even joined the team for preseason. So I haven't even heard like Yeah, I'm not sure if it was, you know, they have to get all their visas in a row and all that. I'm not sure if that was related. And now there's an international window and she was called up. So, you know, she's not with the team now. But so I haven't even heard like inklings from preseason. Like I've heard inklings from preseason about like how Lily Real is doing really well and like Sophia Cook and stuff like that. But no, I have no idea. So I'm really looking forward to seeing Stella and what she's able to bring, because, yeah, I think that is like a big kind of question mark. Like this like exciting international signing that I really have no idea. Because I think she was playing internationally at the youth level. So it's like there's no good scouting, well, potentially.
Do you feel like the youth movement has been, generally speaking, a real, like a conscious decision and one that is meant to better fit the athleticism demanded by Juan Carlos Amoros's system?
I hope so. And I think, you know, at least in the years since I've been covering Gotham, the team has trended on the older side. It's very often been at or near the top of being some of the older rosters. And, you know, this season, it's got to be kind of down there. I mean, you know, you got McCall Zerboni retiring, Michelle Bados retiring. So I think that, and a lot of college kids, Stella, Mac coming in 13, 14 years old. So I would imagine that the age is trending quite young in Gotham, which I think is twofold, which is one, you know, yes, obviously, you know, a younger team can kind of keep up with the high demands of Juan's system, which involves quite a bit of running, more running than I've ever done in my life. That's for sure. And also, you know, have younger players who can like develop into this like very specific style and demands that he puts on his team. So, yeah, no, it's could work really well for them.
Even if you take out McKenna Whittem as the outlier and only focus on outfield players, the average age of the squad is about 26, which is right in the sweet spot, you'd say. You know, a fair amount of veterans to balance out a lot of the younger kids. I want to talk about Midge Purse for a second. This process to get her re-signed really dragged out through the offseason. And again, in as much as you're able to share in public, like, why did it take so long for Purse to finally land back at Gotham and only on a one-year deal?
No, it's a good question. It's so funny because like during the whole offseason, obviously like I'm poking around trying to figure out if she's going to sign or not. And one day it's like, yes. And one day it's like, no. One day it's like, yes. And one day it's like, no. So I was like, is it happening or not? Like, not that was like super reliable, but I'm just like trying to figure out like what's going on. I mean, she really held us there to the last minute. And I'm curious, and I don't know for sure, but I would imagine, well, a couple of factors. One is, you know, she's coming off an injury. And I think that's probably really difficult for a player who played almost basically none of the previous season. So you're going into free agency, and I think every player going into free agency, even if like you're pretty sure you want to sign with, you know, stay with your club, you're going to test the water. I mean, why not? Like YOLO, right? Like this is like your one time to see. So I would imagine, you know, coming off an injury, that might have been, you know, some part of the conversations. And also, you know, maybe she's been at Gotham for a long time, since 2020. Like she's kind of like the face of the team, I would say, at this point. Like, so for me, I love covering her. So like, I really wanted her to stay at the team, but I was kind of thinking like, you know, with all the departures, I was like, gosh, I really hope she stays, because like, she's a statement player for this team. So I am happy that she stayed, but I'm sure there was a lot that went into her decision of, you know, I've been at this team for 5 years, you know, I'm getting older, I'm coming off an injury, you know, just kind of seeing, you know, what's out there. I would imagine she was talking with a number of teams. Otherwise, it wouldn't have taken 3 months to land on a deal with Gotham. But ultimately, I think it's really good that she did. And I think, you know, as long as she's getting healthy, and Juan said at the last press conference that, you know, she's back on the field and getting healthy, that she could maybe have a really good season.
So when Gabby Portillo signed, I certainly thought that meant Midge was probably moving on, because now that she's not, all of a sudden, Amoros has two 29-year-old international caliber right wingers to deal with, and no one who's really naturally suited for the left wing now that Lynn Biondolo is gone. I can't imagine you wouldn't want to play Purse and Portillo in the same side. How does he balance that forward line? Has he given the press any kind of indication on how he's going to try and use both of them on the field at once?
No indication whatsoever. And I'm definitely curious to know. The other day I asked the team, I was like, hey, can I come to a practice before the season starts? Like, I just want to poke my little nose in there and see what's going on. But, you know, they did a couple friendlies abroad behind closed doors. So I have no idea what the heck went on there. I'm really interested to see what he does with those two in particular, because very similar to DeMelo and Martin, like, you want them on the field, but how do you make that work? So I'm glad I'm not a coach, and I do not pretend to be one, nor an armchair coach, because I don't know. I don't know how you square that and how you make that decision. However, I will say that Juan, in his time with the NWSL, has been very clear that he is not afraid to shift people's positions on the field to get the team to where it needs to be and get the players on the field that he wants on the field. And, like, for instance, I think we'll see Taran Torres as a left back option. That we kind of saw that towards the end of last year. I think we'll see it again, you know, coming into the season. So we'll see. Maybe it's Midge Purse on the left, Midge Purse in the center. Who knows?
Ellis Stevens has now made a lot of decisions about who's going to be the striker very difficult, because she just had the season of her life last year. But Esther is also there. And we saw how he tried to use Esther often either as a false nine or basically as a number 10, pulling her so deep into midfield to try and get on the ball. Maybe that problem solves itself, at least at the beginning of the year, while Rose Lavelle is still rehabbing, if she's not ready to come back in 3 weeks' time. But when Lavelle is available, how do you deal with wanting to use Stevens and Esther in the most optimal way possible?
I know. That's a question that keeps me up at night. I don't know. I mean, I'm actually so disappointed that Esther was injured last season, because she was about to be on a tear. And then she ended the season really strongly. I mean, Ella, like you said, like had a season of a lifetime, also culminating in a national team call up. So I don't know what you do if you're JCA wanting to get them both on the field. But then again, you know, something that Gotham has also really relied on has been its depth. I don't know if this team has the same depth that it did last season. In fact, I would say it does not. But, we might see some people getting more playing time than others in that situation. I mean, I just don't see, you know, Ella being a left winger or anything like that. So, although, I don't know. Again, Juan could do some crazy stuff. So who knows?
It feels like the transition between these two seasons, Gotham, who were defensively resolute last season, have essentially lost, other than Nyswanger, who I think it would be fair to say isn't necessarily a massive defensive contributor at times. It seems like that back line plus Lily Riel is actually maybe even marginally better. You've got a full season of Jess Carter. My question is, the Bruninha, Mandy Freeman, do you expect that to be like a true horses for courses situation where matchup dependent depends on who's starting, or do you expect one of those two players to sort of win the starting job?
Yeah, that's a really good question as well. And I mean, Bruninha has played on the right a little bit as well. So I could see her maybe, you know, get Jess or Bruninha on one side, and then on the other side, you have Mandy and Taran Torres. I could kind of see that being maybe the way it's set up a little bit. But it's interesting. I mean, so there are two very different players. You have Bruninha, who's still super, super young, international talent, who the sky's the limit for her. I think she's technically a really, really talented player who is still definitely learning and growing, who happy to report, I did her first ever all English interview a couple of weeks ago. So that was, her English is getting really good. And then you have someone like Mandy Freeman, who's, you know, a little bit older, been with Gotham since 2017, I believe. So many, many years, who can also play center back, who played a lot of center back, but all of a sudden had like an amazing end of season as a left back and just was like killing it. So my crystal ball is telling me that we might see Bruninha more on playing on the right side than on the left, which she did a lot with Jenna Nyswong when Jenna was on the left and Bruninha was on the right, and finding her maybe it's more Bruninha, Jess Carter, actually, and Mandy Freeman, Taran Torres. Or maybe Bruninha kind of floats between both sides and can kind of come in depending on what the game needs. If Freeman's the starter, which if she's playing as good as she was at the end of last season, I would say, yeah, she should be the starter.
Do you think there's a chance, given the center back depth that is present in this team, that we end up seeing Juan Carlos Amoros bring out a back three at times?
That's a great question as well, because even like I'm thinking like, gosh, so now you have Tierna, Sonnet, Lily Real. Sonnet can play in the midfield as well. And I think she likes to play in the midfield. So then what do you do? Because you have Sonnet, you have Martin, you have DeMello. It's actually kind of interesting. And so I almost wonder if you would see a lineup where, and because again, Juan is famous for having players like shift around, like in the middle of the game, that you know, we're shifting around positions and see something like that, you know, like a almost similar to kind of like what Maitane was doing in 2023. And I think it's very possible, like you could see them in a three back as well, with, you know, having Sonnet, Tierna, and Lily back there. So yeah, that'd be cool. I'll never forget, like, random tangent. And I think it was 2021 where, like, Freya Coombe randomly, like, did a three-back one day. And I was like, girl, what? It was amazing. I don't think it went very well for them, but I really enjoyed it.
Not surprising there. It's funny how you mentioned that this team probably lacks for depth. And Eric and I have said that on past episodes. And yet this conversation, as we go through each positional area, it's almost like we're talking ourselves into the idea that maybe they do have more depth than we're giving them credit for. Whether we believe that or not, let me hold your feet to the fire for a second. What is your preferred optimal starting 11 on opening day for Gotham?
Oh my God. You know, I have to actually like look at a roster because I need to envision it. Let's see. Hold on.
Well, if you go to our handy dandy potential formations tab.
Oh my God, you do have that. Okay.
I did pitch my idea for what this 11.
No, I see it. Well, okay. I think it's going to be me in goal. I think,
sure.
Evan, you'll be
your wingspan.
Yeah. I love to fall down. You can be at the nine, like, for sure. Honestly, like, your predicted lineup is not interesting. So you have Carter, Sonnet, Davidson, Bruninha. I would do Carter, Sonnet, Davidson, Freeman. Then I would do Howell, Martin, and double like that. Then Esther right now, because Lavelle is not here. And I'm almost positive she will not be ready for the start of the season. Purse, you put Gabby on the left. And then Ella up top. I would agree with that.
And with a lot of positional flexibility, I think this conversation has probably illuminated, as Evan was saying, like the possibility that last season Gotham might have had the deepest team in NWSL history or approaching it in terms of just having like legitimate starters deep on the bench. But this time around, it feels like the team is maybe more like 15, 16 deep, but with a lot of players that can plug and play at different positions.
I would agree with that 100%. Yeah, like I feel like they almost had like two 11s last season. And here it's like a regular amount of a good depth team.
You're right. Yeah, yeah. A regular good team
yeah,
as opposed
yeah.
to Galacticos.
Right.
Barring a massive injury crisis, like 16 players can get you pretty far in the playoffs, you know? We'll see how it shakes out. All right.
Let me ask my question, which I actually think you anticipated and may have answered, but this is the question I like to ask all of our guests, which is, if you are Juan Carlos Amoros, what is the one thing causing you nightmares, keeping you up late at night in advance of this season?
Oh my gosh. Definitely how tall I am. Yeah, I would be really upset with him being so tall. Obscenely tall. One time I saw him standing next to Yael and I said to Yael, wow, you hired the one person who can make you look short, because she is also extremely tall. No, but what's keeping me up at night if I'm Juan wanting to be in Spain? I don't know. I think some of what we've talked about already is just in terms of like these roster decisions and who's starting where, like the Esther versus Ella, Bernini versus Mandy, like, you know, making these game day roster decisions when you actually have like pretty tough choices to make. But I'm sure, you know, from last season, he's pretty used to that. And I think just like the NWSL as a whole is just getting better and better and better. And I think it's just going to be a really, really tough season. I mean, look at the Spirit. I think they're my picks, the Spirit are probably my picks for the championship this year, just like on paper. Yeah, that's what I think, just like the roster that they had last year combined with the players that they're bringing in, having Saar be healthy. Although no Andy Sullivan, but for a fantastic reason. Congrats to her on her pregnancy. But I think that Gotham is going to have a really, really tough season.
So, moment of truth then. Where do they finish in the table?
I definitely think they finish top five. I'm going to say, gosh, this is hard because it's like, does Orlando do it again or do they flop? You know, like, do they do, do Kansas City, you know, pull up another really great season? Probably. I mean, they got 10 VP over there. I'm going to say fourth.
That's my prediction as well.
Yeah, I'm going to say fourth.
I have Gotham fifth, but I think we're all in the same sort of ballpark with this. I think that the only thing that potentially the amount of roster turnover means that you just don't have the continuity that you had going in last year, or the lack of, you don't have the superstar level of team that you have going in last year, but you have to figure out new people in new positions. That said, I agree with you. I think there's like maybe a top three and then maybe a top five, and Gotham is in that 3 to 5 range. That kind of feels like they're not quite where the Spirit roster is, but it'd be very foolish to consider them worse than fifth.
I think they're definitely top five. I think it's more likely that they finish top three than bottom five, if that makes sense. But I see them in that 4-5 area.
I think the space of variance for them is that there's every possibility that they get the Portillo purse balance correct. Maybe Lily Real and, you know, maybe Sarah Schepansky is like a really great winger off the bench and Lily Real really hits and all of a sudden they are finishing third, and a very comfortable third at that. Or the college signings don't quite work out, which means their depth has shrunk. They can't get the balance of all of those attackers quite correct, and maybe also, Amoros hasn't learned some lessons from last year about how to make sure everybody stays happy when we're shifting playing time around as fluidly as they did last year. And then all of a sudden, they're fifth because the roster's too good to finish lower than that. But a lot of games just don't end up going their way. We're all spot on. It's that third to fifth window where anything can happen.
Totally right. I think there's a few little like unknowns here.
Yeah, this conversation like kicked up my question mark about whether they were fourth or fifth, but I'll stick with what I had going in today. It looked kind of bleak earlier in this offseason, but as things have sort of settled down, I think as the dust clears, it's pretty obvious that this Gotham team is still a well-built, good team in this league. I think the only real concerns I ever have with them, and it's a Juan Carlos Amoros thing, is converting all of those ball wins in the final third into shots. And I wonder if that's a thing that will ever get fixed, or if Gabby Portillo can help with that, can help being a little more direct.
I thought you were going to say converting all those players to left backs.
No, but also it would have been like not the most nonsensical thing ever.
Yeah. Can Juan Carlos Amoros stop converting every player to left back?
If only we could find a system that fit three left backs. Yeah.
Yes, but Evan, like you said, Midge Purse coming back, I think is going to be a huge X factor. Yeah, so excited for that.
Yeah, because again, less than 900 minutes across both seasons under Amoros' tenure, which is kind of amazing to think about. We really just have not seen what Midge Purse could be playing inside of an Amoros system. So hopefully she can stay on the field.
I mean, we saw that glimpse in the final, and it was one of the best performances that any player has put in a final in this league. It is an incredible.
If not the best, yeah.
If not the best single game performance. And yeah, you just hope that a healthy Midge Purse looks the part.
Jenna, you're the best. Love you dearly. Thanks for coming on the show. You can find Jenna on social media at Jenna Tinelli. You can read her work in Sports Illustrated.
Thanks, you guys, so much.
There you go. The opinions of someone fresh out of college.
Yeah, that's what I think every time Jenna Tinelli. It's just like, you know, just a fountain of youth and bubbly joy.
Just working as a barista, thinking about applying to grad school, you know, the world at her feet.
Jenna Tinelli.
Oh, dear. That is our show for today. Check your feed for our final season preview week episodes, including conversations on Kansas City Current with Tom Baum of Shea Butter FC and a couple from Kim McCauley on the Portland Thorns and the North Carolina Courage. And as for us, we're back for the regular season next week on Tuesday. Our regularly scheduled programming back into high gear.
We've screwed with our rankings so much. Do you think next week we actually just have to talk about what our rankings look like after week one?
Sure. We'll do a heat check.
Yeah. Because boy, what a perplexing preseason. I can't wait for two more teams to be in this league.
No doubt about it. In the meantime, join our Patreon. We have a link in the show notes where you can do that for only $6 a month or $60 a year, and you get 4 exclusive bonus episodes every single month, including access to our Discord server and access to our semi-regular YouTube live streams. Our Discord is maybe the best hang in WOSO, so you should really consider it. Also, follow us, rate us 5 stars, drop a review in your podcatcher of choice, tell all your friends about us, follow us on social media at XOwnGoals, that's the letter XOwnGoals, and drop us an email, expectedowngoals@gmail.com, that's the letter expectedowngoals@gmail.com.
All right, guys, thank you. Thank you for putting up with us.
Until Tuesday, have fun on opening weekend.
Yeah, bye.